Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Silver Shield Exchange. I'm your friendly, undomesticated social Jeremiah. My name is Ryan Brooks, joined as always by Chris Duane. SilverShieldExchange.com is the website. SilverShieldPodcast@Hush.com is the email address to reach us. And Truth Never Told on YouTube for now. I'm going to do something a little out of the ordinary this week and let Chris just take it from here because I think he's better suited to introduce our guest. I'm really excited about it, but I think Chris can do a better job. So, Chris, just take it away, brother.
Thanks. It's my great pleasure to introduce Sean from SGT Report. He's got the YouTube channel SGT Report 07, I think it is. And, Sean's actually had me on his website and podcast and done a couple interviews with me. And I, when we started bringing on guests to the podcast, Sean was one of the first ones we reached out to because he brings a lot of, passion and a broad spectrum of ideas to the truth movement. And I'm very proud to have him. SGT Report is my top, really, two sites that I go to. I go to the Drudge Report to see kind of what the mainstream is doing. Then Sean's SGT Report really covers the broad spectrum of all the, alternative media stuff. A lot of stuff I don't agree with, but, he follows under that same kind of idea. Listen to all and follow none. Let the viewer decide what's true or not. So without any further ado, here's Sean. Sean, are you there?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. What a nice introduction. You're checking in the mail, my friend. Your silver is in the mail.
Well, I figure, you're one of the few people that I've met during this process, who's in the public spectrum. And I can say without a doubt, Sean is definitely a guy who talks the talk and walks the walk. I've met a lot of kind of people who don't really, their public personas don't match up with their personal. And Sean is, he's even nicer in person than he is, a lot of the stuff that we may even get to see him all pumped up over, a lot of the stuff that we cover. But, it's great to have you here. We're going to, go through all of our topics today and, have a good time with this. So, what do you got for us?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on. And I do feel like you and I have become true friends, over the recent years. And I feel grateful. I've made so many good friends through the internet, through the web, through this alt media. Really some of the best friends I have. It's hard, I think, as you get older and you become an adult to make new friendships that last. A lot of our oldest friendships are ones that we have from high school or college. And but I've met so many great people, and it's because, as you guys probably know, we have to compartmentalize our lives to some degree to stay sane in this world because, as we were talking, Ryan brought up the groundbreaking interview with Bruce Jenner that will be broadcast worldwide on, what is it, Friday night on ABC Mockingbird television. And we have to compartmentalize our lives to stay sane because the regular world, the American public at large, the Mockingbird world, is insane. And sometimes you feel a little off balance because we can't talk about these issues that we're going to talk about on this podcast with friends, neighbors, and colleagues because they're all insane. They're all brainwashed, and they don't want to face the paradigm, the stuff we're going to be talking about. I'm really rambling here, but I want to say hi to Ryan.
I've never met Ryan before,
so hello, Ryan.
Well, let me just jump in real quick, guys, and say it's a pleasure to have Sean on. And before we go any further, I know Chris can kind of feel the same way as far as I do. I just bubble up like the whole week of just kind of keeping it in. I don't have a whole lot of people I can just ramble all these issues that we talk about on a weekly basis to. Someone that's going to keep up and be able to, or have anything to say. So it's a great release for us. It's a great thing to be able to help keep ourselves on the right track, inspire other people, and then to find other folks like yourself, bring them on the show, go back and forth, get these ideas out there and keep people on the right track, or at least try to.
Yeah, I agree. I think so much of my public work was I got to the point where I learned so much of the stuff and I kind of, felt depressed about knowing all this stuff because nobody could relate to it. I mean, I famously ruined relationships with friends and family and, kind of blew up my world because I was so adamant about this stuff. And I turned out to be right in 2008. I left my family business in May of 2008 and the whole financial world blew up that fall. And, it took a lot of time for me to go, why didn't people understand what I saw? And I think I took a step back, and really looked at the psychology of why people are so, opposed to change. And that's why I came up with, my first effort was the Sons of Liberty Academy, where I logically just laid out all this stuff. It probably wasn't the best, presentation, you know, wasn't very slick. It was a PowerPoint presentation done in the basement at 4 o'clock in the morning. That was my first effort. And then I think when I did The Greatest Truth Never Told, I looked more from the psychological aspect of why, you know, people needed to see the world differently. And I've, after all the stuff that I've talked about, and I'm sure Sean feels the same way, at some point, you know, you feel comfortable with what you've learned, what you know, and then you can move on with your life and not really, you know, be too concerned about the people who don't quite get it because, you know, if they don't care, well, you know, why should you, you know, get all upset about it? So, you know, this, all my work now, I feel is, you know, number one for me to keep myself sane and then hopefully get the other people who are looking for a different, different view of what's going on out there, give them enough encouragement to say, yeah, I'm not the only crazy one that sees the world the way that I do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if I may, you guys, can I just sort of be, you know, every great podcast or radio show needs a sound effects guy. So can I just today, can I be your soundbite guy?
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
let me in service of Diane Sawyer's groundbreaking interview tonight with Bruce Jenner, which is going to be so powerful. And I'm really just at the edge of my seat. I can't wait to hear what he says about his future. And I know he wants to know himself how his own story is going to end, a very powerful soundbite that they're playing in the promotion of that piece. And in service of that, I just want to play this soundbite from my friend Harley Schlanger, who sees things just a little differently than Diane Sawyer.
With the media, with the political debate, most Americans have no idea about what's going on in the rest of the world, except where we're fighting wars. And we learn about countries because we're invading them or we're attacking them, but we don't know what actually is occurring in many of these other countries.
Yeah, and he started the soundbite, and I skipped ahead. Listen to this part.
We live under a dome of deceit.
So that's Harley Schlanger, my friend from LaRouche Pack. He's such a historian and intelligent, lucid commenter on all things political. But we live under a dome of deceit in this country, don't we?
Yeah, and it's so pervasive. I'm doing a coin series. I haven't released it to the public yet, but it's called The Pyramid of Power, and I've identified at least 12 different levels where our lives are really conspiring against us. You know, I've talked everything about these religious collectivists, you know, the education system, the banking system, the military system, the prison industrial complex, the medical industrial complex, the politics, the media, you know, the war machine, the guys that own the Federal Reserve. I mean, there's just so many different levels to this, you know, that really entrap us and get us to, you know, empower them. And I think one of the best things that I kind of had my aha moment was that I realized that they're all collectivist schemes. They're all about spreading some lie down to some people to get us to empower very cunning men who concentrate all their time and effort on getting us to manipulate them. I mean, you know, Sean, you've worked in corporate situations and, you know, you look at what the you know, the product is for most companies or businesses or militaries, they probably spend 30 or 40% of the time on, you know, messaging and management and public relations and social media. It's all about the message more so than the product or value that they provide. Mm-hmm. You know, and that it works on all levels. And I think once the individual realizes that they are the source of power, they're the ones that all these big, powerful guys are so concerned about making sure that you see things the way that they do, because the moment that you stop, paying attention to them, they have no more power over you. And I think that was just a big aha moment through all these ramblings and all these videos that I said, you know what? They don't control us. We empower them. And in the moment that humanity walks away from all these schemes, you know, the drone pilots don't fly the drones, that the cops stop taking people's rights away and people stop working and banking and shopping and doing all these things and stop unconsciously supporting all these collectivist schemes and start consciously supporting individuals, I think that's the way forward. So that gives me great hope.
You used a great word, and it reminds me of, you know, have you guys seen the list of words that nobody's so supposed to use when describing
Hillary? Yeah.
I don't think this word is on that list, so I guess we can be free to use it without going to jail. And it's the word you used, cunning. having showing skill in achieving one's ends by deceit or evasion. And that is what these people are, and that's what they do. I mean, it literally is like our government has been – it's not like. Our government has been hijacked by a mafia, and these people operate like the mafia. And they have great skill in achieving their ends through deceit and evasion. And I guess that is a it's a word I guess we can be free to use against Hillary to describe her. And I just can't even believe they're giving us Hillary and Jeb Bush as the front runners.
Well, you know? Sean, don't worry, because Marco Rubio, I don't know if you've heard, but Marco Rubio, he's got his new campaign going on here. And well, I think it's a good way to transition into the quote-unquote news. Marco Rubio, I mean, we're talking about cunning mafia tactics and this issue here. Marco Rubio from Thad Bevers, Beversdorf via firstrebuttal.com. Basically, he's talking about Marco Rubio's new campaign. It's really called A New American Century, just kind of like PNAC, right? And it's there's a video right below with Bill Kristol saying we're ready for Marco Rubio. So you've got the thugs on the left, the thugs on the right. Take your pick. Chris, what are your thoughts with Marco Rubio and his PNAC campaign?
Well, we covered Mr. Kristol being the chief neocon Zionist warmonger, chicken hawk, you know, onward Christian soldiers. When we covered, I think, was it Senator Tom Cotton, this 29-year-old that came out of nowhere, this former vet, that wrote a letter to Iran basically saying that no matter what Obama negotiates in 2 years, that negotiation is going to be worthless because the Republicans, the neocons are going to be in power there. So then you got Marco Rubio, who's another this young guy who really hasn't done anything other than be the, presidential contender, you know, even when he was, you know, in other office, that's what they were talking about. And I had said all along that this 2016 campaign is going to end up being Jeb and Hillary, not because they're the best candidates, but because they have the most money. And, you know, Hillary's going to play the role of, you know, the George Bush, Bob Dole, Walter Mondale, John McCain, the old war horse that deserves a nomination, but is going to look horribly outmatched by the younger, more spryly challenger, in this case going to be Jeb Bush. And, you know, the entire Republican nomination is really, who's going to be his VP. And now that I've seen Marco Rubio's slogan of a new American century, it's going to be Bush Rubio 2016, because the neocons have been out of power for 8 years. They were hammering for a war in 2008 against Iran. They couldn't get it. Obama's fumbled on his attempts to even do wars in Syria, Ukraine, and all these other nations. And, wait and watch for who's after Obama. All these, you know, kind of conservative Republicans who think that Obama's the Antichrist and, you know, he's the worst guy. Just wait. I've said even in the Sons of Liberty Academy when I did that, in 2010, it's the guy after Obama, the guy after the failure, the guy after the collapse. That's where the real fear and tyranny is going to come in.
Sean, what's your take on what's going on there with Marco Rubio?
Well, I just want to say this about the Clinton-Bush dynasty. I think it's very telling. I was reading a piece last week saying that if you're 52 years of age or under, you have never participated in a presidential election in which there wasn't a Clinton or a Bush either running for president or in the administration at a high level. And, if we go all the way back to Prescott Bush, of course, in the 30s, in the 20s, he was rubbing elbows with the, you know, industrialists and the bankers at the highest level. And, of course, was later exposed as being part of a coup against the federal government. They wanted to roll out a fascist coup, he and his bankster buddies. This is Prescott Bush, the father to George Sr., who was the head of the CIA. And it was General Smedley Butler who blew the whistle.
Hoorah.
Pardon me?
Said hoorah.
Yeah,
busted it up.
Semper Fi, and he played along long enough to get the goods, expose it, and there were congressional hearings. This is all on the record. This is not alt media conspiracy theory. This is how bad the Bush family is. So I think it's absolutely beyond the pale, obvious now, that our government is nothing more than a reflection, a parlor trick, there are men behind the curtain that are revealed now and they're, you know, in the White House, and the people don't care. And just beyond that, how insane is it that they can present Clinton, Hillary, as a front runner, given all her crimes? I mean, her crimes are now so public that, you know, she's doing her private business as a Secretary of State with a private server, and then she scrubs all the emails.
But it's interesting to note, though, you know, David Morgan was on the broadcast a couple weeks back, and he pointed out when Hillary released this video, that was a great idea because, you know, that's what's going to get the votes. And I watched that video, and I tell you, Sean, you know, despite all these crimes, that video made me feel good as your average American, you know, like she's going to fight for the average American and all that feel good kind of stuff. So, you know, it really is the puppet show. I think when I listen to the show and I'm editing it, I'm like, puppet show. It's kind of, you know, a little too far, but it really is it not? It truly is just a puppet show at this point in time.
Yeah. It gets back to what Chris was saying. It's branding, right? It's marketing. Yep. And it only works on the dumbest of the dumb. And unfortunately we live in a society right now that most are kind of dumb when it comes to politics, and certainly when it comes to history. The American people don't know the history that we've just talked about. They don't know any of that. They don't know Prescott Bush. They've never heard that name. And so, it's branding, and the way that they're rolling out Hillary as, you know, and I watch Fox News when I'm on the treadmill, you know, at the club.
That'll get you running.
Yeah.
And it makes me so angry because they're just as bad as CNN, as they say that she's the front runner. There's nobody else. And and this will be the opportunity for the American people to see that she's genuine and sincere and for the people and has a great sense of humor. These are their talking points. She's a wonderful woman with a great sense of humor.
Fox is saying that?
Yes, absolutely. It leaves me speechless. So the Rubio thing, I don't know. He doesn't have a chance, and I don't think. And, you know, the other thing that they do on Fox News is when they talk about who are the front runners, they always say it's Jeb Bush is the front runner, the preeminent front runner. Nobody else.
Who hasn't really announced.
Yeah, and then when they say that maybe there are some challengers, they'll mention Chris Christie, maybe Marco Rubio. They will never, ever, 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 ever mention Rand Paul. And I know there's a lot of listeners who aren't fans of Rand Paul, and certainly he's a little too chummy with, you know, the Zionist entity in the state of Israel than his father was. But he's the best of the worst, in my opinion, and that's why they will never, ever give him his due on Fox News, despite him winning at CPAC in the straw poll and being a genuine grassroots front runner. But
it is interesting to know how they do. Like, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong here, but can you remember a time where they hyped up a guy before he announced more so than they have with Jeb? You know, like, Jeb's
no.
the front runner, but he hasn't even announced it, and he's got 100 million, but he hasn't
even announced
it. He's going to win, but he hasn't announced it.
Yeah.
And it's like, really?
He's not even planning to announce until June. You know, I mean, it's he's got so much time. They've already said he's raised $100 million. I mean, who knows what he's going to have by then. Hillary's talking about raising $2.1 billion for her campaign. So obviously there's a lot of money floating out there. And,
And Clinton Charities, another crime before I forget. Clinton Charities is now having to refile 5 years of taxes because they've in so many million dollars in foreign contributions and not reported them as income, then now she has to refile. If you and I had charities, Chris, we'd be in jail.
In jail, totally.
And probably not able to run for president.
No. Well, that's the other thing. Like, when this whole Hillary email scandal was up, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Ryan was like, you know, do you want to talk about it? I said, no. I said, it's a total non-issue. I said, if you think emails are going to derail Hillary Clinton, forget about the 34 people that are dead in the MENA drug scandal in Arkansas, all the guys that died mysteriously while the Clintons were in White House. You know, they literally have a blood and semen trail all over the Clintons, and somehow how do they show their face in public just after what fucking Bill did, you know, in office, much less Hillary, who got Benghazi blood. I mean, they're murdering psychopaths. I mean, if I was any Republican challenger, I would take the 5-second video of Hillary saying, "We came, we saw, and he died," when they were talking about Gaddafi. I mean, a laughing, hysterical hyena psychopath, you know, reveling in the blood of a dictator or a guy who, you know, another guy out in the street, while he got brutally beaten in the street. I mean, She's a complete psychopath, and we deserve the exact politicians that we get, because this country is so far gone from what it once was that we needed to we need the worst politicians, the worst policy to bring this all to an end. There's no reforming the system. There's no saving the system. There's no lesser of two evils. They need the worst policy. We need this whole thing to go completely bad for the entire economy to tank. And for us to get the worst reality check of realizing that we cannot get something for nothing. We cannot live on this debt and death paradigm anymore. It has warped our soul. It has warped our politics. It's warped our families. This is a horrible, horrible situation. And people need to realize that this is not going to end well for anything, and that you need to start, focusing on the things that you can control.
You know, Chris said we need the collapse. And I want to read something that's pretty startling later, if you can remind me to come back to that. But I just want to say, you mentioned the body count, the Clinton body count, Chris. And
yeah.
It just makes me come full circle on my statement about the Clinton-Bush dynasty, because when Clinton was governor in Arkansas and they were running all the drugs out of MENA, and you take a look at that body count, most of the people on that list were double-tapped in the back of the head with their hands behind their back, and then it was ruled suicide by the corrupt coroner who did all of the coroner reports on all of those deaths. And the Clinton-Bush dynasty, I say that because Clinton was vetted, because he was running drugs. He was allowing the CIA to run drugs through MENA, Arkansas. And he was chummy with Bush, the Bush family, former Bush head of the CIA. CIA runs drugs. They bring drugs in. It's on the record. We all know it. Michael Rupert helped expose a big part of that. So when I say the Clinton-Bush dynasty, and when you say the body count, this isn't hyperbole. These are crime families that have been running this country for the better part of 30, 40, 50, and going back to Prescott Bush, darn close to 100 years.
The Gambinos and Genoveses on steroids, huh?
Yeah, that's what Salenti says. These are crime families in charge of this planet.
Well, definitely it brings to mind like movies of The Godfather and things like that. Listen, you guys go back and forth about some of the stuff that's all out there. And that's the other thing that throws me off, and I'm going to try to tie it into where we're going here, is that, the truth is out there. The information is out there, but there's just an unbelievable amount of willful ignorance, which is so frustrating when you see, longtime Democratic supporters, and you ask them, have you seen Hillary say, we came, we saw, you died? Oh, no, I can't believe she said that. I won't even entertain that idea, and it's just frustrating. But I suppose
in the words of Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make now? Like, what difference? Like, that's what all it comes down to. Like,
yeah. But the other point I was thinking of, just hearing you guys go back and forth, is that, as things get closer, get closer to whatever big bang is coming with the global economy and all this fiat money and debt and everything, you'll see as the American dream slowly slips out of reach for more and more people, you see, or at least I do, just more of like an extreme, more people that are pissed off, more angry people, more people that are going to be so fired up to do something. We have to do something collectively. We got to take our country back. We got to save America. We got to fight Jade Helm. We got to do all these different things. And where I'm going with this, guys, is the other article here, Chris, from 21stCenturyWire.com. About God Told Me to Do It, The Dangers of America's Lunatic Right. And the article by Peter Sterry, he's from Britain, and he's talking about these politicians like Michelle Bachmann with their kind of Christian extremism, if you will, anti-Muslim rhetoric, and these people getting more and more popularity. She's just one example. She mentions Baby Hawk Tom Cotton, as he's referred to in the article.
Yeah, the Bill Kristol guy.
Right, the junior senator. But do you see that kind of tying along as far as things progressively get worse, more and more people just getting more extreme, and then that almost coinciding with the rise of this radical right, if you will, where more and more people are anti-Islam and anti-this, anti-that? Just get me on track. Where I'm going.
No, I totally get it. I, even though I was in the Marines on 9/11 and I certainly fell into that whole neocon, nuke 'em all type mentality back then. And then as I woke up to realize that I was emotionally manipulated by guys like Karl Rove, who, talk about them being history's actors, and that we're just going to continue to create our own realities, and you're just going to study what we do. And, then you read Henry Kissinger talking about military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as foreign policy pawns. And then you see, you know, false flags throughout the, you know, the USS Liberty, 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Lusitania, Gulf of Tonkin incident that never happened, you know, all these things. Then you start to see that there's a lot of power in developing this. And underneath all of these wars and all the other stuff, and I'm going to forget the historian's name, and I love every book that he's done. But one of his theses is that there's a underlying view of racism that is the subtle tone underneath each and every war out there. And you can kind of view it as, you know, when we were fighting the Japanese, they were the Japs, and even the Japanese viewed the Chinese as subhuman. You know, the, like every single tyrannical nation that goes off to war kind of views either overtly or you know, subtle tones that the enemy is subhuman, which is what the psychopaths that are in charge need their soldiers to do, to view that they're, you know, these animals that deserve to die. And there's certainly this a ridiculous amount of anti-Muslim fever out there, thinking that all Muslims are terrorists. I mean, you know, there's a billion Muslims in the world. And yet when I look back at the last 20th century, I can't think of too many wars that were started by Muslims, you know, much less on the scale that we've done. And I would contend that if the Christians are truly afraid of the Muslims, they should look at themselves first. I think the Christians have probably the worst track record of spreading debt and death throughout all of the lands. These are certainly not followers of Jesus Christ. These are not people of peace. These are not people who, you know, are walking in the path of Jesus Christ. These are warmongers, and something is infecting them. And I would contend that it's Revelation 3:9, the synagogue of Satan, that, you know, that there's people out there who want war. You know, I did that video, The Secret Cause of World War III, and you could see that the Zionist neocon cabal that has profited off of debt and death throughout the ages has funded this anti-Muslim hysteria with either you know, message boards or you know, and I don't get all these Christian mega churches that are all supporting Israel. Like, Judeo-Christian values maybe combine at the Ten Commandments, but if you look at the Old Testament, which only the Jews recognize, and the New Testament, which is what Jesus kind of brought to us, they really don't have anything in common. Like, even the two gods in those two books are vastly different gods, and yet somehow you know, we have this deep tie with the Jews, even though the Muslim faith comes from the same Abrahamic you know, a vision of whatever God was. And until onward Christian soldiers realize that they're being manipulated into wars that don't benefit us, that they're the ones that are paying the blood, that they're the ones that are paying the cost, that they're being manipulated by this Zionist regime, these Sheldon Adelson guys who, you know, want to swing our military around and because they're the ones with the most money buying all the votes and buying all the popularity. And we're involving ourselves into wars that we have no right, no justice in doing, and it's certainly not reflecting any Christian, you know, values out there. You know, you want to know why the Muslims are pissed off? Do some freaking research. Look up why Iran calls us the Great Satan. You know, we went in there, Operation, what was it, Ajax with Kermit Roosevelt, and overthrow Mossadegh, who was the first democratically elected leader in Iran. And Mossadegh dared to challenge the British Petroleum, who was taking 90% of the revenues, oil revenues, out of Iran because they made some deal with some warlord back then. And Mossadegh had the balls to say, hey, 90% is really not fair for you to take of our oil profits, so how about a 50-50 split? And when the British said no way, they overthrew the poor guy, jailed him, and put in their Shah, this dictator that was American and British backed. In 20 years, the Shah ruled, or however long he did, probably, I think it was a little bit less than that. And they had the Savak, which was this secretive military police that the United States, again, in Britain, put together to protect the Shah, that totally destroyed Iran's economy, built up this puppet of the Shah living in gold and all this other stuff. Then finally, the new generation came up going, this isn't right, and overthrew the Shah. And guess what? Then the United States gets us involved in backing Saddam Hussein, Donald Rumsfeld there, shaking hands, selling him chemical weapons, supplying military intelligence and stuff to fight an 8-year war against Iran, where Iran lost 1 million men. 1 million men. I mean, there's a generational scar in the Iranian population. And, you know, we're still talking about the Civil War, you know, where we lost 440,000 men. You know, Iran has 1 million men, you know, that are there. And here we are, war drumming, Dick Cheney's in office talking about how we can get into war with Iran and all this other stuff. And for what? What does Iran have to do with us? You know, we're backing up thugs like the House of Saud, who's beheading, won't let women drive, you know, and all this other stuff. We got, you know, Israel with their Greater Israel Project, destabilizing the whole Middle East, even very moderate regimes like the Syrian leader. I mean, the guy's an ophthalmologist who married a British girl. And, you know, somehow that's a regime that needs to be gone, Bashar al-Assad. You know, this whole thing needs to eventually come to an end. And any time these, you know, these Zionist Christians or whatever get up there and I support Israel, I just refer them to Revelation 3:9. Because Revelation 3:9 says that I will, you know, basically punish those that say that they are Jews but are not. They are the synagogue of Satan. They are basically using this holier-than-thou fervor to say, you know, God made me do this and that these are God's land, God-chosen people. No, no, no. Jesus came to us and said, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. And if you're following this militant, racist mindset that is being pushed on these, you know, Christians and Jews or wherever, you know, look at who you're serving. Are you serving the synagogue of Satan, or are you serving Jesus?
I hate to be the bad guy and switch topics, but I have to, just in the interest of time. So, Sean, I'm going to throw these at you.
Well, wait. I have
to. Sean, that's Sean. He loves this stuff.
Is this all Sean's AO right here? Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm really the bad guy. All right. I'll just mute myself. Sean, take it away.
No. I got to respond to that, though, because I agree with what Chris is saying. And, you know, this is a very, very big, important topic, because if you don't cover Israel and if you don't speak out against Israel, you get called, you know, COINTELPRO or, you know, a shill. And if you do speak out against Israel, you get called an anti-Semite. You know, I just posted something last night here at SGT Report called CIA Drone Strike Kills Adam Gadon. But what about Adam Perlman? And, of course, in the comments, I get trolls coming out saying SGT report is blame the Jews report. And that could not be further from the truth because, and this is a very important distinction which Chris hit on, it was Gutel Schnapper, how do you even say that, Schnapper Rothschild, the mother of the Rothschild boys, who said, if my sons did not want wars, there would be none. And what are the Rothschilds? They're Khazars. And so the bankers, the Illuminati, have done a wonderful job pitting the world's religions against each other and using the Bible against the people. And so many of the Christians that are dumbed down are just that. They take the Bible at face value. So as the bankers shape the world and we see these religions at war, it all makes sense because the people don't understand the history. The way I look at Israel at this point, you guys, is that the Rothschilds are the only family on planet Earth with nuclear weapons because they basically own and control Israel. And if you can see Israel and how the Jews are being used by the bankers, if you can see things through that filter, things make a lot more sense. And as it pertains to this country, standing with Israel no matter what her crimes, you know, I like Michael Rivero, blame Congress because Congress is in the pocket of Israel. And there's been a couple of voices in the alt media that are extremely consistent on this issue. That's Gerald Celente and Michael Rivero. And I have nothing against the Jewish people. Some of my best friends are Jews, and they're good guys, and they don't know squat about this history. And, you know, they're not, you know, Talmudic Jews that are trying to carry out some big conspiracy. So I just wanted to say that because I think it's very important. It was the Rothschild mother who said, if my sons did not want wars, there would be none. And,
here's
wars are banker wars.
That's another thing. Here's another thing that people should go look up. You know, if people look at the Israeli flag and see that it's the Star of David, that is not the Star of David. That is the Seal of Solomon. And Solomon spoke, I mean, he was like almost satanic in itself. But he was able to speak to genies, and he, you know, amassed this huge amount of fortune. And the Seal of Solomon, this two triangle thing, is supposed to be the secret that gave the Rothschilds their power and the Solomon's power. And the two triangles, at least from what I've seen, are a symbol of transmutation. And if you look at what transmutation is, it's, you know, to be able to turn, you know, metals into, you know, to gold and stuff like that. And that's really this symbol, the Star of David, the Seal of Solomon, is viewed through a lot of Jewish people as, you know, not representative of the Jewish faith, that they would rather have the, you know, the Hanukkah candles or something else being there. But this Seal of Solomon was on the Rothschild, which their last name was Bauer. But they changed their name to Rothschild for the red shield with the Seal of Solomon that was outside their shop in Germany, and they changed it for that because that's that transmutation of turning, you know, things into gold is what gave them their power. And really that symbol of you know, transmuting energy into something, you know, tangible or power or whatever, is basically the same kind of thing where if you look at these cunning men that sit at the top of these pyramids, they spread these big lies down to the individual at the bottom, and we give them the power up to the top through our careers, our savings, our marching off to wars for them. They're the ones that are spreading these big lies down to us to get us to give the power back up to them. So if we're looking at a consciousness level, religious level, you know, big scale level, that transmutation, that Star of David, the Seal of Solomon, is a physical representation or a symbol of, you know, how they're able to maintain power over these generations. And until the individual realizes that they do not control us, we empower them. We need to walk away from all these collectivist schemes. If you're working for a psychopath boss, get out of it. If you're working for some corporation, you don't like what they're doing, you know, on the grand scale of things, you know, get out of there. Find ways of making a living somewhere else. It's not worth your soul. It's not worth, you know, the humanity to continue to sell out for the lesser of two evils.
That brings us to our weekly ISIL update. This here comes from Guy Taylor from the Washington Times. Apparently, the Islamic State's latest mass beheading video might seem like guerrilla camera work shot on a desolate Libyan beach, but a closer look reveals a level of cinematic sophistication that U.S. officials and one American filmmaker say likely involved rehearsals and perhaps even multiple takes to pull off successfully. The video purports to show the executions of dozens of Ethiopian Christians against multiple backdrops, including one replete with blood-colored waves lapping up from the Mediterranean. So apparently these guys are so good, they've got to do rehearsals, multiple takes, fancy camera work. Sean, what's your take on the latest on the ISIL beheading video from this past week?
I don't believe any of this stuff anymore. I mean, everything I consume, no matter what avenue it comes from, goes through the filter that I just described, which is intelligence agencies, you know, have created this problem, and they foment the terror to keep the people afraid so that we'll give up our liberties and they'll give up their rights. And I know there's one video of supposed beheadings where the ISIL, quote-unquote ISIL terrorists are marching the guys next to the ocean, the water. Did you guys see that one? And, you know, the analysis on that is that those are awfully tall terrorists. It just, there's stuff about this that doesn't compute, and it kind of gets me back to my article about Adam Perlman. You know, who are these guys? We're supposed to believe that Adam Gadon, you know, was a born a Jewish man and couldn't stand Islam and ranted and raved about Islam being a huge problem, and then he suddenly switches religions and embraces Islam, and then in short order, he's an advisor to bin Laden, and he is a trusted advisor to bin Laden and a spokesperson for Al-Qaeda. We're supposed to believe that, right? And his father sat on the board of directors of the ADL. We're supposed to believe this. And they just announced on Thursday that Adam Gadon was killed in a drone strike, a separate operation from the CIA drone strikes that killed the Italian hostage and the U.S. hostage, the American. Separate operation. It was just sort of mentioned as an afterthought because the CIA wants to scrub the file on Adam Gadon, and they certainly don't want the media sharing with the people that Adam Gadon is actually Adam Perlman. And I think it's just a big CIA op, and that's the way I look at all this stuff at this point.
Well, and again, getting back to these Christians, I stand with Israel, you know, Muslims are bad. Again, look at the U.S. involvement in radicalizing Muslims, you know, these Wahhabists. You can look to Zbigniew Brzezinski creating the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda to fight against the Russians, and that we supported them, we funded them. You can look at the British opium trade that's flourishing in Afghanistan after they shut off the opium production in 2001. We went in there and liberated Afghanistan, and the opium is now at double what the records were back then. You can look at us supporting the House of Saud. I mean, they were, you know, Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's like saying Bush America. I mean, the House of Saud is a, you know, a militant family that we propped up. You know, we don't support democracies, you know, elsewhere. We support the biggest thugs out there. You know, if you want to look at the radicalization of the Muslim faith, it all comes back to some CIA troll, some operations, some thug that we created. We created these enemies. Even I got Hillary Clinton saying in Congress that we are the ones that supported these guys. We're the ones that are making the mess. So if you want to look for the radicalization of Muslims out there, look no further than Washington, D.C.
We'll switch it up and take a look at the economy here. Our first issue comes from Zero Hedge. Stunned Greeks react to initial capital controls and the decree to confiscate reserves, and they are not happy. So apparently on Monday, the 20th of April, Greece launched the first shot across the bow of capital controls when it decreed that due to an extremely urgent and unforeseen need, it would be obliged to transfer, as in confiscate, quote-unquote, ideal cash reserves, or idle cash reserves, located across the country's local governments, for example, various cities and municipalities, to the Greek central bank. Sean, what's your take on the latest from what's happening in Greece?
Well, it just reminds me that, you know, when we talk about the economic collapse that is coming, and I think Chris would agree that it's probably a global collapse. However, it is going to be felt, I think, to a much deeper extent by Americans, and when we lose the dollar as the world's reserve currency, someday it'll happen. I don't know exactly when. I don't know when this great crash is going to come, but it is going to hurt, and it's going to be devastating, and the rest of the world isn't going to care. And I think everybody thinks, because we're sort of myopic in our view, that because we live in the United States and we're brainwashed since birth that this is the greatest, most powerful, most benevolent nation on the planet, that it will never end, and that the world couldn't live without us. But we're going to be like Greece, and Asia is going to it's going to rebound. They've got all the jobs, all the manufacturing, all the gold, and Asia will rebound, and the rest of the world isn't going to give two shits about us. It's going to be – it's a little bit like us right now sitting here having this conversation, thinking about the poverty and devastation going on in Detroit. If you're not in Detroit, you don't spend much of your day-to-day time thinking about Detroit. But we're going to be gutted, just like Detroit is gutted, and I'm talking on a macro level. This nation stands – it stands to reason we're going to be totally gutted and devastated, and the rest of the world is just going to move on.
Yeah, there was a quote, and I forget what it was, but it was an Indian finance minister talking about a recent meeting, economic meeting, and he was stunned about how America is almost walking away from this, from the world stage, and they don't want to talk about it above their breath because they fear, you know, you don't want to talk about it, but they're actively preparing for when the United States can no longer do this. I mean, this is an economic reality. This is an empire that's far, outlasted and expanded beyond anybody's expectations. And it's gotten to the point now where you have, a citizenship that, has this entitlement mentality, that has this consumer mentality, that is not afraid of debt, that thinks that, our foreign policy has the right to go out all over the world, overthrow governments, so long as, we're able to get cheap gas and drive our cars and go to Disney World on, during the summertime, that's okay. The rest of the world has been victim to this. And I try to tell people, I'm sure, just as the Iranians remember what we did to them and, during the 50s and the 70s with the Iran-Iraq war and all this other stuff, the Indians will remember British colonizations and how they deprived the whole subcontinent of being able to arm themselves. In fact, Mahatma Gandhi said that was one of the worst crimes in humanity, or one of the blackest crimes, was the British Empire depriving all of India of their arms. No wonder they had to, have a peaceful revolution. There wasn't any guns to be had. I'm sure the Chinese recognized that they had two opium wars of many European nations invading and taking over their ports because they were fighting against the British bringing in drugs to balance the silver trade. I'm sure Russia knows about the Bolsheviks, how we funded the Bolshevik Revolution. These nations have suffered horribly. I mean, all of South America. I mean, look at our policy down there, the Monroe Doctrine, the CIA involvement in drugs and bombings and overthrowing. I mean, our history is replete with just abhorrent acts. And yet somehow, because the Americans get to, live off the way that they do, they think that they're going to be able to live without it forever. And I think this baby boomer generation is the last generation that lived better than the generation before. And, starting with my generation and certainly Ryan's, it's going to be progressively worse. And I think the biggest problem is not even the financial, economic, military retreating from the world. It's going to be the emotional shock of, no longer being we're number one. Like, everything that's been related to, the American dream, USA, 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 that will be a bad nightmare for future generations. They'll look back and go, oh, God, I can't believe we were even like that.
The quote for listeners Chris brought up there, it's from the article at Global Economic Gathering, U.S. Primacy is Seen as Ebbing, from the NewYorkTimes.com. And that was economic advisor to the government of India, Arvind Subramanian. Submarinian, if I said that right there, but he basically said it's almost, the U.S. is almost handing over legitimacy to rising powers, and he also said people can't be too public about it, because but it's also the most important issue in the spring meeting. So it seems like the world is getting ready for it, but like you said, the average American, we're still here just doing our thing. Bruce Jenner's coming on this weekend. I want to know what his new name's going to be, never mind all this stuff. But it's not going to end pretty. Historical roadkill definitely comes to mind. Another economic issue here, fellas, the interesting article from Bloomberg about New York apartments, art, top gold as stores of wealth, says Fink. And that's from BlackRock Incorporated's chairman. He said in a conference in Singapore on Tuesday that gold has lost its luster and there's other mechanisms in which you can store wealth that are inflation adjusted, such as apartments. First, we'll go to you, Chris. What's your take on the statement there from the CEO of BlackRock?
All right. So I think it's important to understand that just because you're rich doesn't mean that you're necessarily intelligent, and that these ultra wealthy are just as susceptible to peer pressure and what's expected of them and what the crowd is doing. As the masses kind of clamor for the Super Bowl, when you get wealthy and you arrive, all of a sudden your thing is to, be at the latest art show, to be seen at, a restaurant opening and stuff like that. And there's a great deal amount of pressure amongst the ultra wealthy, to have these, properties and to fashion them in the best way and to get it into, Architectural Digest and to buy, a Picasso or whatever that they have really no other places to, unleash these wealth. And I think it goes to show that the wealthy nowadays aren't so much the, you know, the innovators that, you know, have brought about, you know, great changes and done great things, for the most part, and, you know, I'm not talking about all of them, but for the most part, they're parasites on a global rigged economy that they well serve or that they create for themselves. And they're not really interested in investing their profits and power into creating sustainable, things to improve. I mean, you know, Andrew Carnegie, I mean, was one of the richest men of all time, and he's devoted his entire life, once he sold everything, to building libraries all over the country. I mean, you look at, and they're beautiful pieces of architecture, and they were there for the public good. But we don't get that now. We get, you know, billionaires wasting, you know, money on fancy cars and these ridiculous paintings. I mean, $155 million for a, you know, a 4x4 painting that's, you know, looks like garbage. I mean, it's insane. The contemporary art market is absolutely out of their mind. So, you know, let all these ultra wealthy waste their time and money on these, you know, luxury apartments and stuff like that. Because I can tell you what, wherever, you know, it is most popular is going to be the worst when this paradigm collapses. You know, for these ultra wealthy to be buying these, $75 million apartments when the streets are burning, because people are starving in the in Manhattan and things are out of control because there's no power or food or water. What's that going to be worth? See how liquid it is then. When the stock market collapses, watch how these real estate prices deflate the fastest. You know, we talked last week about how Jamie Dimon says that there's going to be a liquidity problem. They're seeing liquidity problems in the dollar with the flash crash. They're seeing a liquidity problem in the treasury market. The U.S. Treasury market, we've already seen the flash crash of the stock market. And he said it's going to be all about liquidity. And I find it ironic, and I read this on Sean's website, that J.P. Morgan has taken delivery of, what, 8 million ounces of silver just this month, and that the J.P. Morgan silver vault is now at an all-time high, and that the coincidence that the timing of them crashing the silver market in May 1st of 2011, and then them opening up their silver vault 2 days later and watching how they've been stacking consistently, paper shorting the market, which Blythe Masters already admitted to that they short the paper market, but they're long the physical, shows that, and then match it up with Jamie Dimon's words of a liquidity crisis. You could be seeing a situation where the most liquid asset in the world and of all time, silver, it will be the premier asset to have when times get tough. Because I tell you what, if we're seeing flash crashes in the largest currency, the dollar, flash crashes in the largest bond market, the U.S. Treasury market, the largest crash in the stock market, flash crashes, it's all fake illusion. And the reason why there's a liquidity problem is because it's all based on air. And as soon as the paradigm shifts, people are only going to care about what they can get a hold of, what they can touch. And that, to me, is going to be gold. And I think silver is going to be the absolute winner in all of this. And if you look at the actions, and not the words of J.P. Morgan, but look at the actions of J.P. Morgan and how much silver they have, you know, that, to me, is just a screaming red flag that people should be stacking like there's no tomorrow, because there will be no tomorrow. And don't forget, they're also the custodians of the SLV. Which is, you know, also an illusion there, but I'm sure that they do have some physical silver, and that they are the ones that are going to have the control over it. So, you know, very important stuff to pay attention to.
And one other thing that I'll throw at you here, Sean, to get your response, but our last article from the London Telegraph, the IMF last week told regulators to brace for global liquidity shock. And the last thing I'll mention is that the financial engineering that preceded the last two financial crises is back, International Monetary Fund warns. And this was in the past week. So what's your take on what Chris said there and then the latest from the IMF?
Well, I agree with Chris. I don't think most of the world's billionaires really care too much about people at this point. And I think what's going on with real estate around the planet, and specifically in New York, as we're seeing apartments now sell for $100 million and up, is that there is – well, who is the person that you quoted about the article? Who is the person who said apartments and art are better investment than gold?
He's the BlackRock Incorporated chairman. His name is Fink.
Yeah, he's right. And what he's right about is that the inflation and the hyperinflation that is in the market is in you know, we're seeing what the billionaires are doing. We're seeing what the ultra rich are doing, is they chase these things and they chase the prices higher. Just read an article the other day about, I think it was a hedge fund guy. He bought an apartment in New York 2-3 years ago for $40 million, and he thinks he can sell it now for $80 million. That's hyperinflation. So people say there's no inflation. This is where the money, this is where the stock market money's going, and gold is not doing that because it's not being allowed to do that. Can you imagine if gold were trading freely, how high the price might be at now as these people chased tangible assets like gold? At least they're putting their money into something tangible. An apartment is certainly tangible, but there's no way that an apartment is worth $100 million in New York City. And as far as the oligarchs not giving a damn about the people anymore, there was a time in this country where men like Henry Ford wanted to build a quality product, and he wanted his employees to be able to purchase the product that they worked every day building. And he tried to pay people fairly so that those people who worked for him could buy the cars they built. We don't see that anymore. It's more and more rare that we see that. And in fact, the corporation that I used to work for, Target, just laid off 2,200 people, mostly the high-paying people that had been there for 15, 20 years, and said, good luck to you. We can replace you now at a much cheaper salary with, you know, young people, or not replace you at all. So we're seeing the consequences of an economy that is in far worse shape than the government's lies would lead us to believe. And as for the IMF, that's just a crooked organization, and the World Bank, it's the same people at the head, the banksters that run it all. They're playing chess at a whole different level, and most of us don't know how to play chess, certainly not at the level they are. So as it pertains to the IMF, I forgot what your question was, but can't
we're talking about J.P. Morgan with the silver.
Yeah, well, J.P. Morgan and the silver. I was just going to say, as far as the IMF goes, I can't stand Christine Lagarde, nor can I stand her magic number 7. They're all into the occult. They're all into numerology, and what they're up to is nothing good. And J.P. Morgan, yeah, I think that they've hoarded, according to Ted Butler, between 300 and 350 million ounces of physical silver in just the past couple years. Meanwhile, they're short paper silver on the COMEX, keeping the prices low, beating the prices down, and they're hoarding physical. I don't know when this paradigm is finally going to shift and silver is going to rise to any value that's considered fair, but what J.P. Morgan is doing should be the canary in the coal mine for those of us paying attention, because they're doing the very opposite of what they might suggest others do. They're hoarding physical.
And the other point is that so much of the news that we've seen is that, China and Russia and all these other nations are buying gold. Don't you find it ironic, Sean, that, J.P. Morgan, the chief manipulator, the too big to fail, the, presidential cufflinks guy, is by their own actions stacking silver? Like, I don't even think they're that involved in the gold market. And I think that the showing the disparity of the gold to silver ratio, all this talk about, crash JP Morgan, buy silver. I said in the Silver Bullet, Silver Shield video series, you're going to have a day when, JP Morgan realizes that there's going to be more money in going long, physical. And, geez, here we are that day. I mean, 2015, 3 years later that, 4 years later, they are the long physical market, and they're not doing it. I heard one person, oh, they're going to sell the physical into the market. No, that's not how they work. They work on a scarcity mentality. They would withhold more silver off the market and squeeze people, forcing them to buy at a higher price and get that. So again, this 4-year bear market in silver, while it's been rough, is just maybe the last opportunity in humanity to be able to acquire a king's ransom on a pauper's budget. I mean, the fact that, I've talked to people with very modest means that have been able to store 1,000 ounces of silver is to me historically significant, and one that I'm never going to take my eye off the ball, especially given all these things that we talk about. I mean, we're talking about a global economic collapse. We're talking about robotics apocalypse in the future, and half of the jobs not being around, in the future. These are all very, very incredible times to be able to have the opportunity of being able to stack silver at these prices.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very significant that J.P. Morgan has acquired a stack, a hoard that is roughly 3 times bigger than Warren Buffett's hoard when he tried to corner the market and then was forced out of his position by the government. So it is very significant. I just don't know when this paper price will ever bounce back to anything considered fair.
Going a little bit different direction, guys. Looking at the techno trend, if you will, it seems like almost every week, Chris, we end up talking about something related to Google or Facebook or the future of technology, how it's going to affect us. We have a couple of issues this week. The first one comes to us from Steve Toback over at Fox Business, and he basically, I'll just read the quote that he has at the top of his article from Eric Schmidt, and it says, "We don't need you to type at all because we know where you are. We know where you've been. We can more or less guess what you're thinking about. Is that over the line?" And that's a quote from Google chairman Eric Schmidt, and the article, again, Why Google is the New Evil Empire. He makes the case for how dangerous Google's actions have become over the past few years especially. First, we'll go to you, Chris, and then over to Sean. What's your take on the latest revelations about Google and their role in the future, if you will?
Well, there's certainly this don't be evil thread. I mean, that's their corporate logo, is don't be evil. I mean, I don't know how much more in your face that you know, why would you even have to say that? Other than that they have access to information, and they're all about monetizing, tracking, and controlling humanity. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that Google, Facebook, a lot of these, companies that have come onto the scenes and been so prevalent and so powerful so early on, are simply bastard childs of DARPA and CIA and InQtel and DOD and all these other, government agencies that want to get, people to willingly submit to being tracked, creating this stuff. I mean, what an absolute dream Facebook is to the intelligence industry, intelligence agencies. So now that they don't have to have 50 agents tracking some guy, tapping into copper wires, listening to their conversations, following them somewhere, no, just log on to Facebook, see who his friends are, see what comments he makes, then you can check his, through all, I think it's called, not Prism, but another one of these programs, Carnivore, there was another name for it, where they they have programs where they can linearly and visually track everything, your license plates, your cell phone, your GPS, your bank accounts, what you buy, what you wear, all in real time. And they have these, kind of like your time machine backs up your computer. You can go back in time and see all these things on one screen. I mean, it's really sick technology. And the thing that I fear is that if we ever get to the point where we do have this next Hitler, Stalin, kind of tyrannical thing. I mean, can you imagine what Hitler would have been able to do, Stalin would have been able to do, Mao would have been able to do with the kind of technology that they have now? I mean, it's truly horrific. And this gets back to what are we empowering? I mean, my most popular video that I've ever done is called Delete Facebook. And it got people to really look at what Facebook has done to us. And then, Google, the same thing. I mean, they're probably bigger and worse than Facebook would ever be.
Sean, what's your take in Google in general?
I completely agree with Chris. In Google's history with DARPA, the way I look at this, you guys, is that the people running this planet are playing chess at, Garry Kasparov's level. And the average person living in this, really essentially now at this point, a prison planet, they don't know how to play chess at all. So it's ironic to see these people roll out Facebook, to see these people roll out Google, and they can make multi-billions of dollars and let the people do all the heavy lifting. So it's a tattletale society. Everybody's on Facebook reporting about themselves. So Chris is right. It's the ultimate intelligence tool because it's the most honest form of information. It's people reporting on themselves. And meanwhile, the controllers got to make hundreds of billions of dollars off this intelligence system built on the backs of the people. And as for Google, take a look at what they've been buying up in the past few years. They've been buying up robotics companies, drone companies. They've been making very, very curious investments in some extremely alarming technologies. And you might even be able to make the case that Google someday essentially could be the public-facing version of Skynet, as seen in the Terminator movies.
Yeah.
Because they have all of the technology and they're going to lock it all down. And it is a real concern. It's a real concern because Chris is right. You know, if Mao, if Stalin, if Hitler, you know, Hitler's maybe a bad example. I take heat from people whenever I bring up Hitler because we know who he was backed by. But the point is, if these guys had that kind of technology that this government, this criminal government, has today, this fascist criminal government, the government in bed with the corporations, we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble. And it kind of gets me back to that meltdown, the economic meltdown, which is coming. And I'm getting to the point where I don't wish it to happen because it's going to be far worse, far darker, and far more horrible for the average person than I ever thought was possible. And it's really going to be scary because how do we fight back against this fascist oligarchy, this worldwide global oligarchy?
Yeah.
When we're broke and poor and starving and on our knees, it's going to be damn hard to get any sort of libertarian, you know, sovereign nation back out of the ashes.
Well, let me add just a couple more pieces to the puzzle here while we're on the topic, because I know we have the other article about the machines. This article from the New York Times, the machines are coming. And to make a long story short, the author is saying the machines are getting smarter. They're coming for more and more jobs, and not just low wage jobs either. And then also, I mentioned with you, Chris, earlier, the coming brain chip article by Brandon Turbeville over at Activist Post. And so you have what companies like Google are doing. Match that with the rise of the machines, where they're literally going to be taking on the labor force, if you will, in our lifetime, in the future. Yeah. And then tag that on with issues that Brandon brings up in the coming brain chip, with how this love of technology has been rolled out to the public. And one thing he pointed out in that article that really stuck out to me was, you know, within the past 5-6 years, just how much more obsessive people are, how much more into their gadgets, their technology people are. And so what I want to hear from you is, you know, how does this all pan out? You know, like, you've got, with everything you broke down about Google, the rise of the machines, and then, I mean, hey, why couldn't you just maybe delete all the debt and then issue it with a palm scan or a chip or something, make it trendy, make it cool? They've got all the social mechanisms to make it work. I mean, what is to stop the world from going down this path? As you guys said, they're playing chess, and the average person doesn't even know how to play. I mean, how in the world is the world not going to go that way? I mean, it certainly starts to look like it is going that way.
I totally think that we're headed towards, an alternate reality that I think nobody is really confronting with. I mean, when I first got involved in investing in gold and silver, I'm thinking, okay, the system will reset. There'll be plenty of opportunities on the other side. Yes, there'll be the anger phase, but, you know, if you take the necessary precautions to kind of be out of populated areas and a little bit self-sufficient and have some good friends, you'll be able to weather the storm, and that there'll be great opportunities on the other side. But the one thing I failed to look at is what kind of technology, we're entering into. I saw that a lot of power would shift from, kind of east to west, and, you know, the United States is not going to be the king of the world anymore, and it'll be a tougher United States. But the realization and the consciousness of these engineers and billionaires and stuff, you put in their life extending technologies. They're talking about head transplants. They're talking about downloading human consciousness into brains. They want to live forever. That they won't have emotions. I mean, they don't have emotions now. So
linking people to the internet. That's the big one. And I hate to interrupt, but I mean, think of how many people would do that. Man, I can link onto the internet. I can post on Facebook without even having a phone. Like, I could just tweet from my brain. That's the stuff they're working on right now. And they're telling us, I mean, how far ahead are they? But that's the other point I wanted to say. Sorry for interrupting.
No. But here's the factor that has really gotten me even, more interested in silver, is when you start to realize that this is within my lifetime. I think back 20 years ago and then look forward 20 years. I mean, that's when my kids are going to be coming into the labor market. Half of the jobs that are out there right now will not exist because they will be taken over by robots. People go, well, yeah, people used to farm and now they're doing other things. Labor is what the middle class was able to rely upon to transfer wealth back to themselves. And without the ability of labor, and you have now multiple generations that have been dumbed down that don't have the creative resources and faculties and the families are broken up. So there's not even a familiar network, and there's no they don't have a mentoring system where there's trades to be learned and stuff like that. You come out of a collapse And then, you know, within 5 to 10 years of that, they have all these new technologies. The economy is probably going to get wiped out, considering that 70% of the United States economy today is based off of consumerism that will die. So you can already chop off 2/3 of the economy that will probably never, ever come back, because we're not going to be able to print the world's reserve currency. And then you figure the other 30% is probably double what it should be because of the 70% that's been driven by this American debt and death empire of consumerism. It's a very scary reality that's headed forward. And for people to not be buying silver, to be able to at least create some sort of buffer so you can kind of keep your head above water when all these things happen, and be able to have some real tangible wealth, so that maybe you can navigate into the next paradigm, into seeing what is, you know, available. We're talking, you know, we could be headed out to serfdom anymore. And, you know, then another kind of thing, people go, well, all this technology is going to bring about a better life and better quality of life. Who says that they're going to keep giving us, you know, the highest technology down to the consumer base? When Americans are broke, starving, there's probably violence, they probably won't be able to travel anymore. You know, these billionaire techie guys are going to create their own paradise and leave us out of there, because what do we have to offer? They don't need our labor. They certainly don't need the hassle. They don't need union strikes. They don't need all this other stuff. They can get their glorious life with all their technology, life extending technology, and, you know, all this other wonderful stuff that they could be able to do, and they could just leave us behind. So unless you have some, you know, great skills, great family, or great wealth that you're going to be able to rely upon, it's going to be a very harsh world coming up here, and one that, you know, people have got to take advantage of this now while there is still time, while you still have the opportunity of creating wealth and making conscious decisions in your life to make a better way forward. This is the time, because I'm telling you, once the system collapses, once this technology comes in, once this thing, there'll be far less opportunities to move ahead. I mean, we're already seeing the American middle class get gutted. I mean, it's falling apart. I think I saw 50 million illegal immigrants immigrants have come in since, 2008? I mean, we're competing now against, illegal immigrants that are driving down our labor value. What are robots going to do? You know, like, what would that do to the humanity? I mean, you think it's tough in a third world nation. Try being a first world nation living in a fourth world reality.
Let me throw this at Sean here with the singularity. I want to throw a quote at Sean with singularity, and then just give us what you have there, Sean. The quote comes from Juan Enriquez, and he is a singularity promoter. And this is what he said. He said, quote, "The new human species is one that begins to engineer the evolution of viruses, plants, animals, and itself. As we do that, Darwin's rules get bent and sometimes even broken. By taking direct and deliberate control over our evolution, we are living in a world where we are modifying stuff according to our own desires. Eventually, we get to the point where evolution is guided by what we're engineering, and that's a big deal. Today's plastic surgery is going to seem tame compared to what's coming." And that's Juan Enriquez. Singularity, for folks that don't know, is the people that want to meld together humanity with technology, from my understanding, but I found that to be pretty disturbing. Sean, what's your take on this whole technocratic future and the comments there from Juan Enriquez?
Well, look, you know, everybody's familiar with, Ray Kurzweil and, you know, his desire to live forever and the push towards transhumanism. And that's not new to anybody listening, but I think what the distinction is important is that the distinction to make that's important is that none of us, I don't think at this point, trust the corporations to do the right thing to benefit the people. This planet could be an Eden if it were run by benevolent, wonderful, human, God-fearing human beings. It's not. The planet is being terraformed and turned into a hellhole by these same corporations that are telling you that they're going to guide us into this brilliant technological future that is going to be just so wonderful for mankind. And the fact of the matter is, I just did an interview with Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.com, and I bring it up because the concerns are very real. You know, we know that the Air Force wants to control the weather and wrote a white paper called Controlling the Weather, Weather Wars 2025. And we know what they're doing, and it's not benevolent. It's not good for the people. And this move towards the singularity is very scary. And just to back up a little bit further, what I'm saying about these corporations and the fact that they can't be trusted, there's not even any regulation. Recently, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration released its final guidance to companies that use nanotechnologies in food products. The FDA recommends that companies consult with the agency before taking products to market and warns that nanotechnology products may require additional safety review on a case-by-case basis. These corporations are going to do whatever they want to us. And what is our recourse? We don't know what they're putting in the food. We don't know what, well, we do know what they're putting in the water, and it's not good. They're shutting off water in California and telling the people that, you know, the only way to make that a better situation is to not, you know, allow water to be freely used and to privatize water. So poor people will just, it's a genocide in progress, as Harley Schlanger has said. So this move towards transhumanism and this move towards the singularity is a move toward, essentially, if you want to put it in Christian perspective, it's a move towards a satanic planet. And, you know, it's Lucifer's wet dream, because they're actively destroying God's creation. DNA is perfect and beautiful and delicate and intricate and designed, and it blows scientists' minds away, and they're ruining it.
And the point, Chris, that you brought up that really I'm still just thinking over in my head is the fact that, you know, they could just leave us behind. And with the rise of this human technology combination, you know, they're going to make it trendy. They're going to, you know, kind of hang it like a carrot, like Pete Crackers likes to say, dangle the carrot in front of people, get them to bite onto it. But eventually they'll have so many people on it that if you're not one of the people hooked up to a computer, then you're going to be like a lower substandard form of human. You will be left behind. You'll be like the poor people in the Hunger Games or something. And I wonder, like, is, to you, like, when you hear that kind of stuff or read that kind of stuff, is there anything to stop that kind of stuff from happening? I mean, hey, let's not go too far out of our own control, but man, like, you could see, yeah. I could see people going for something like that.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, that's why throughout all of my studying, and I mean, trust me, I got into this thinking about the financial system and the military system. But at the end of the day, this is not a political problem. This is not a financial problem. It's not a, you know, between religion problem. This is a battle of consciousness. What are we actively or passively supporting in our lives day to day? And, you know, one of my videos that I'm most proud of, which probably hasn't gotten very many views, is, you know, talking about how geeks will enslave the world. I think about all these brilliant young men that are, you know, pursuing these passions. They're getting paid tons of money. And, you know, none of these technologies that come out are actually improving human life. And what I'm talking about is think about how much money is going into the video game industry. Think about how much money Google is doing to track and do all this other stuff. Think of how much money the trillion-dollar military-industrial complex, trillion-dollar-a-year military-industrial complex goes into, you know, killing more people faster with different ways. I mean, it's insane that we spend so much money on this. And I just released a video called Bill Hicks versus Alex Jones, talking about, you know, this is a choice between fear and love. You know, you can either, you know, fear these guys or start loving the ones that are next to you. You can create your own better world. And I tell you what, if this Orwellian nightmare, you know, Terminator world should come, I'm going to be in one of the farthest places that I could possibly be with my family and my friends and people who actually care. And I want to create a society that is that is sustainable and works with nature and doesn't, you know, go down this path of trying to manipulate, you know, all these things to control and empower psychopaths. I mean, if all this technology was in the hands of, you know, good, moral, normal people, yeah, Sean's right. This, we would have an Eden. We would have peace. And that's what this, I think, this whole human drama is ultimately going to end up with. We're going to end up going through some really horrible stuff. And at the end of the day, until human consciousness on a global scale recognizes that collectivism, psychopaths, you know, creating unsustainable controlling mechanisms in a universe that the source code, the DNA, the operating system is based off of abundance and resonating light and within our soul, until we align ourselves with that, word of God, you know, Big Bang or whatever the source code of the universe is, you know, this drama will continue to go on until we get to the point where there's a new consciousness that comes in. And ultimately, you know, these bad guys will end because the stories never end until the bad guys lose. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to have to, you know, unnecessarily go through a lot of pain. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to end up being historical roadkill because they weren't watching what's going on in the world and they're not consciously living their lives. But ultimately, you know, one thing that always gives me hope is that for whatever scheme, for whatever ultimate bad guy, for whatever empire thinks that they're, you know, unstoppable, for every emperor, for every pharaoh that thought they were God, you know, the real God comes into it and ends up wiping them all away, and they all look foolish. And, you know, that poem Ozymandias, you know, here's a statue that's out in the desert that this explorer found that's all crumbled and broken apart. And on its feet, it says, I am Ozymandias. So look at how powerful I am, you know, fear me and all this other stuff. And now it's just a dusted statue. And I think, you know, ultimately, this human drama storyline doesn't end until the good guys align themselves consciously with the universe, live with one another, follow the people of love and peace, and not empower these psychopaths who want to control humanity.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
I just really agree with what Chris said about, you know, we each need to change our own personal consciousness. The problem with trying to defeat this evil is that evil is easier. It works in the shadows. It's duplicitous. It's harder to defeat. It's much harder to bring a child into this world and raise it over multiple years to make it a good person than it is to become a hitman and take a life. Much easier and quicker to take a life than to raise a, you know, a good person. And I think the same is true with evil. And in terms of people having to change their individual consciousness, this goes for everyone listening right now. If you're one of the slugs who works for Monsanto, if you're one of the slugs that works for a military contractor that is killing men, women, and children around the planet with drones, you are personally responsible. You are culpable. You will have to answer at some point in a spiritual sense. Once you leave this world for your crimes, because it's much easier to embrace evil than it is to be unemployed if you're one of those people, I suppose. And I'll go back to Monsanto that is now, it's been revealed that they employ an entire department of propagandists that do their level best to smear truth tellers and those that have blown the whistle on the dangers and in many ways the evil that Monsanto Corporation is involved in perpetrating on the human race. And if you're one of those people working in that department, that propaganda department at Monsanto collecting your check, I don't know personally how you sleep at night, but you are responsible for making that choice. And that is a choice of embracing evil as opposed to helping humanity. So Chris's point is right. Every individual has to take a look at themselves and how they are affecting the future and the course of this planet.
I find people, you know, kind of get trapped in this fear loop, anger loop. They get pissed off about it. And I, you know, I've been trying to get people from multiple different directions to come to terms with, yeah, the world's screwed up, but your world doesn't have to be. As soon as you start focusing your time and energy on the things that you can control, whether it's your health, whether it's, you know, your finances, whether it's your friends, you can make a personal difference in your world. Cause I tell you what, the collapse is not going to be equally bad everywhere all at once for every single person on Earth. It's going to be, you know, felt differently everywhere. And I think the more that you're able to kind of get your head mentally wrapped around it so that when the day does come, you're not paralyzed with fear or think that you were, you know, ruined by it and that you prepared the best that you could. You surround yourself with good friends and family, get to maybe learn some skills that will be valuable in the next paradigm. Certainly food is going to be a major issue that we're going to have to deal with immediately. You know, these are all things that you, once you start focusing your energy on yourself, that you can create a better world for yourself, not only now, but hopefully be a good buffer for whenever the bad times do come.
Training the will. The education of the will is the object of our existence, says Emerson. Nor is this putting it too strongly if we take into account the human will and its relations to the divine. This accords with the saying of J. Stuart Mill that a character is a completely fashioned will. In respect to mere mundane relations, the development and discipline of one's willpower is of supreme moment in relation to success in life. No man can ever estimate the power of will. It is a part of the divine nature, all of a piece with the power of creation. We speak of God's fiat, let there be light, man has his fiat, will. The achievements of history have been the choices, the determinations, the creations of the human will. It was the will, quiet or pugnacious, gentle or grim, of men like Wilberforce and Garrison, Goodyear and Cyrus Field, Bismarck and Grant, that made them indomitable. They simply would do what they planned. Such men can no more be stopped than the sun can be, or the tide. Most men fail, not through lack of education or agreeable personal qualities, but from lack of dogged determination, from lack of dauntless will. It is impossible, says Charmant, to look into the conditions under which the battle of life is being fought, without perceiving how much really depends upon the extent to which the willpower is cultivated, strengthened, and made operative in right directions. Young people need to go into training for it. Those who are determined to have athletic willpower must take for it the kind of exercise they need. The athlete trains for his race, and the mind must be put into training if one will win life's race. It is, says Professor Matthews, only by continued strenuous efforts, repeated again and again, day after day, week after week, and month after month, that the ability can be acquired to fasten the mind to one subject, however abstract or knotty, to the exclusion of everything else. The process of obtaining this self-mastery, this complete command of one's mental powers, is a gradual one, its length varying with the mental constitution of each person, but its acquisition is worth infinitely more than the utmost labor it ever costs. Perhaps the most valuable result of all education, it was said by Professor Huxley, is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. It is the first lesson which ought to be learned, and, however early a man's training begins, it is probably the last lesson which he learns thoroughly. When Henry Ward Beecher was asked how it was that he could accomplish so much more than other men, he replied, "I don't do more, but less than other people. They do all their work three times over, once in anticipation, once in actuality, once in rumination. I do mine in actuality alone, doing it once instead of three times." This was by the intelligent exercise of Mr. Beecher's willpower in concentrating his mind upon what he was doing at a given moment, and then turning to something else. Anyone who has observed successful men closely has noticed this characteristic. One of the secrets of a successful life is to be able to hold all of our energies upon one point, to focus all of the scattered rays of the mind upon one place or thing. The mental reservoir of most people is like a leaky dam which we sometimes see in the country, where the greater part of the water flows out without going over the wheel and doing the work of the mill. The habit of mind wandering, of worrying about this and that. Genius, that power which dazzles mortal eyes, is oft but perseverance in disguise. Many a man would have been a success had he connected his fragmentary efforts, spasmodic, disconnected attempts without concentration, uncontrolled by any fixed idea, will never bring success. It is continuity of purpose alone that achieves results. The way to learn to run is to run. The way to learn to swim is to swim. The way to learn to develop willpower is by the actual exercise of willpower in the business of life. The man that exercises his will, says an English essayist, makes it a stronger and more effective force in proportion to the extent to which exercise is intelligently and perseveringly maintained. The forth-putting of willpower is a means of strengthening willpower. The will becomes strong by exercise. To stick to a thing till you are a master is a test of intellectual discipline and power. It is astonishing, says Dr. Theodore Kyler, how many men lack this power of holding on until they reach the goal. They can make a sudden dash, but they lack grit. They're easily discouraged. They get on as long as everything goes smoothly, but when there is friction, they lose heart. They depend on stronger personalities for their spirit and strength. They lack independence or originality. They only dare to do what others do. They do not step boldly from the crowd and act fearlessly. What is needed by him who would succeed in the highest degree possible is careful planning. He is to accumulate reserved power, that he may be equal to all emergencies. Thomas Starr King said that the great trees of California gave him his first impression of the power of reserve. It was the thought of the reserve energies that had been compacted into them, he said, that stirred me. The mountains had given them their iron and rich stimulants. The hills had given them their soil. The clouds had given them their rain and snow. And a thousand summers and winters had poured forth their treasures about their vast roots. No young man can hope to do anything above the commonplace who has not made his life a reservoir of power on which he can constantly draw, which will never fail him in any emergency. Be sure that you have stored away in your powerhouse the energy, the knowledge that will be equal to the great occasion when it comes. If I were 20 and had but 10 years to live, said a great scholar and writer, I would spend the first 9 years accumulating knowledge and getting ready for the 10th. I will. There are no two words in the English language which stand out in bolder relief, like kings upon a checkerboard, to so great an extent as the words, I will. There is strength, depth and solidity, decision, confidence and power, determination, vigor and individuality in the round ringing tone which characterizes its delivery. It talks to you of triumph over difficulties, of victory in the face of discouragement, of will to promise and strength to perform, of lofty and daring enterprise, of unfettered aspirations, and of the 1,001 solid impulses by which man masters impediments in the way of progression. As one has well said, he who is silent is forgotten, he who does not advance falls back, he who stops is overwhelmed, distanced, crushed, he who ceases to become greater becomes smaller, he who leaves off gives up. The stationary is the beginning of the end. It precedes death. To live is to achieve, to will without ceasing. Be thou a hero. Let thy might tramp on eternal snows its way, and through the ebon walls of night hew down a passage unto day. That's going to do it for our podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Special thanks to Sean at SGT Report for dropping by. Make sure you support him, folks. Check out his websites, sgtreport.com, as well as thelibertymill.com and a new one, thephaser.com. So check those out. Keep stacking, and we'll see you next week.